This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage. In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill
from the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hidden Killers podcast.
That it is. We are now up to the fourth segment of our continuous coverage on the trial of Lori Vallow Daybill. Let's head to the courtroom.
All right. Before we begin the testimony here, let me just inquire of the witness briefly. Have you previously reviewed any of the trial testimony in this case, either by listening to it from any source or by viewing any of the viewing locations here reading any of it?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you for that. So with that in mind, in your testimony, please make sure to make verbal responses to any questions so we keep the record clear. Please try to avoid speaking at the same time of anyone that's questioning you. With that in mind, then, Ms. Smith, if you'd like to inquire on direct, you can do so.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Will you introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, please, and spell your last name?
Yes, my name is Tara Martinez, M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z.
Okay. Ma'am, how are you employed?
I work for Idaho State Police Forensic Services.
Okay. What is your title?
Forensic Scientist 2.
Okay. And what do you do as a forensic scientist at the lab?
So I'm in the latent print section, so that means I process items of evidence to develop latent prints, and then I compare those fingerprints, and then I respond to crime scenes.
Okay. How long have you been at the Idaho State Lab?
7 years.
Okay. Do you have any special training to do your job duties?
Yes, I first have a Bachelor's of Science in Biological Science with a minor in Chemistry and a specialization in Forensic Science. And then I also went through a very extensive training program with the Idaho State Police Forensic Services, which included mock courts, testing, both written and verbal, as well as exercises. And I also had some external training.
Okay. And I don't know if I heard, forgive me, where did you graduate?
California State University, East Bay.
Okay. And are you a member of any professional organizations related to your job?
Yes, the International Association for Identification. I'm also a member of their Pacific Northwest Division.
Okay. Now, you earlier said that you process latent prints.
I process items of evidence to develop latent prints or in hopes of developing latent prints.
Okay. What is a latent print?
A latent print, latent means unseen. So a latent print is something that generally you can't see on a surface and is left unintentionally. So if I'm touching this desk here, I might accidentally leave a print behind. That would be a latent print.
Now, what is the process used to develop a latent print in your examinations?
So it depends on the item. When I get an item into our laboratory, I'll first look at what is the item made out of, meaning is the item porous or non-porous? So like water bottles and glass and things like that are non-porous, meaning they don't absorb water, whereas porous would be paper. So I'd look at things like that to see what kind of surface this is. Then I would look at maybe the texture of the item, the color of the item, and these things would help me figure out what process would be most successful.
Now, do people always leave latent prints?
No. It depends on a variety of factors. First and foremost is you individually. Some people just have better skin to leave latent prints. Maybe they sweat a little bit more. Maybe they produce more amino acids. And so they're therefore able to leave better prints and more frequently leave prints behind. And then also the surface makes a big difference. Is it dusty? Is it dirty? Those kinds of surfaces won't generally leave latent prints behind. And then is the item textured? So all of these things factor into if you'll leave a latent print behind.
If a latent print is left behind, how is it you would collect a latent print?
So on a typical non-porous item, like water bottle, metal, things like that, I first look at the item unaided, just my normal eye, to see if I see any latent prints that maybe are left behind in a little sweat. If I don't see anything, then I'll move forward and I'll look with an alternate light source, which is just a different, gives you different colors of light. Try again to see if anything's left behind. Then I'll actually start the real processing, which starts with cyanoacrylate fuming or superglue fuming. And basically the superglue vaporizes into the air, becoming a gas, and it attaches into the latent print. It just attaches to the moisture in your print. So because prints are a lot of water, the glue likes to attach to the print. After that, I do a dye stain, which is generally makes the whole item stained, but again, it's more attracted to the glue prints because they're a different texture than the rest of the item. And then once that's done, I powder the item. So that's kind of like a general for like a non-porous item.
So when you talk, a lot of us think of fingerprinting as just dusting it with some powder. It sounds like there are multiple other steps.
Yes, dusting is one way to do it, but there are a lot of different techniques depending upon the item and what you're trying to look at.
Okay. If any of those processes work and you're able to sort of have a latent print appear, how do you go about comparing it to someone or something?
So the methodology is ACE-V. Each letter stands for something. So the first is A for analysis. So I have this print. I've developed it from processing. And I'm looking at the print overall to see, first, do I know what area of skin this print is from? Is it from the palm of your hand or is it from a fingertip? Stuff like that. And then I'll look at it to see what kind of distortion it has. Every print is going to have a little bit of distortion. So I'm going to see, is it smeared? Is it spotty? Things like that. And then I'll look at, overall, do I think this print has value for comparison? Do I think it has enough information to be able to move on to the next step? And so the next step would be C, stands for comparison. And at that point, I'm doing the back and forth between the unknown print, meaning the latent print, and the known print. And I'm comparing the two to see the details in the unknown print, do they match the known print, or do they not match the known print? And so I'm going back and forth to see, are the details similar? Are they spaced the same? Do they appear to look the same? And then after that, I go to E, which is evaluation. So at that point, I'm saying, do I think that these two came from the same source, the unknown and the known? Or do I think they didn't come from the same source and I can exclude the two? Or third option would be, do I not have enough information to say either way? Is the print going to be inconclusive? And then at that point, I'm done with what I'm doing. And then the V stands for verification. So another analyst comes behind me and starts the process all over again.
Okay. So just so that I'm clear, because there was a lot there. All right. Analysis, you look at the latent print to see if it's of sufficient quality to compare to something.
Yes.
All right. And then you do a comparison.
Yes.
All right. So if you have a latent print left of an object, how would you find something to compare it to?
Generally, that information comes from the agency. They'll let us know these are the persons that could be involved in this case, and then I can get the fingerprints, the known prints from them directly, or I could get them through our database. So it just depends.
Okay, so when you say known prints, that's prints that someone took from someone who had an ID on them or have been identified with a particular person.
Yes.
Okay. And so you take the unknown that's on a surface and you compare it to known people that you have prints for.
Yes.
And you said something about a database. What do you mean a database?
Yes. So there's a few different databases we use. They're law enforcement databases, and the people could be in the database for a variety of different reasons. And so we can generally pull prints from that database to help us with our comparison.
Okay. Do you also sometimes go out and get prints from individuals so that you have copies as well?
Yes.
Okay. And then the evaluation process, was that the E?
That is the E.
Okay. And that is where you look at them to see whether you believe they're a match.
Yes.
Okay. And then verification process, that's when somebody else basically double checks your work?
Yeah, they start from the beginning. So they do their own analysis, their own comparison, and then they have to do their own evaluation, and then we have to come to some agreement.
Okay. So let's turn to your lab. I believe it's 2020, and then the numbers are 2233. Are you familiar with that lab number?
Yes.
Okay. Is that the lab number associated with Chad Daybell, Lori Vallow, JJ Vallow, and Tylee Ryan?
Yes.
Okay. What was your first contact, if any, with that lab number?
My first contact was we were requested, myself and someone else was requested from our laboratory to assist Rexburg Police Department at the coroner's office to help obtain prints from JJ Vallow.
Okay. And did you go to the coroner's office and get JJ's fingerprints?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have any other contacts with that case?
Yes, I later went to both Rexburg and St. Anthony to obtain fingerprints, footprints or foot exemplars, buccal swabs, and hair samples from Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell.
Okay. So you got fingerprint samples and samples that could be used in DNA?
Yes.
All right. Those would be their known prints and their known DNA sample?
Yes.
All right. Did you also obtain any known samples from Alex Cox?
I obtained known samples, not myself. So I got some through two different means. The first was the FBI database, or they're on file with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, a fingerprint card. And then later I received other fingerprints from Gilbert Police Department in Arizona.
As a result of Alex Cox's autopsy?
Yes.
So you had two different known samples from Alex Cox?
Yes.
All right. Now, turning to that, in this case, did you actually do any actual latent print examinations?
Yes, I did latent print processing and comparison.
Okay. Can you tell us how you came in contact with the evidence that was submitted to the ISP lab in this case?
Yes, so I checked out items 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 18, and then I subsequently processed those items to try to develop latent prints.
Okay, let's break those down just so that we have a clear picture of what specific evidence you looked at. So item 10, what was your item 10?
Item 10 was a white drawstring bag with gray-colored duct-type tape described from the agency as a bag around head JJ.
Okay. So it was a white bag that was around JJ's head.
That's what I was told, yes.
Okay, and that was identified as lab number 10.
Yes.
Okay. What was lab number 11?
Lab number 11 was a bundle or a mass of plastic bags and gray-colored duct-type tape. The gray-colored duct-type tape was labeled by myself as 11.1 through 11.11, and then the bags were labeled 11.12 through 11.15. And these were described by the agency as body bag and plastic, JJ.
Okay. So when you say body bag and plastic, was it the plastic, a black plastic with gray duct tape on it?
Yes, the item that I processed was a black pieces of black plastic and gray-colored duct-type tape, but it was submitted to me in a plastic body-type bag.
Okay. And you processed that. Let's just quickly talk about how you processed it without getting into the late print analysis. What did you have to do so that you could process that item 11, the black plastic with the gray duct tape on it?
So first, a lot of the duct tape was attached to itself. So to be able to process it fully, both the non-adhesive side or the non-sticky side and then the sticky side, I had to take it apart from itself. So all the plastic was pulled apart from the tape, and the tape was pulled apart from itself, and hairs were collected during that process. And then I proceeded to do the non-porous processing sequence, like I mentioned earlier, but the duct tape, because it has an adhesive side, I added an additional process that targets that area.
Okay. Well, there was a couple of things in there I want to make sure I understand. So that the tape that was attached to the black plastic and identified to you is from body bag, right? You took that tape apart?
Yes.
Right? You pulled it apart?
Yes.
Okay. And then did you examine the black plastic?
Yes, both were processed for latent prints, both the plastic pieces and the duct tape. They were just pulled apart from one another to be able to process individually.
And then in item 11, you indicated something about hairs. You found hairs?
Yes, anytime I'm processing an item and I find hairs, even though I don't process hairs, I collect them so that someone else may be able to do so. So I collected hairs in this item and put them back in its original packaging to be used later if needed.
Okay, and so when you say collected hairs, it's hairs off of that black plastic and the duct tape, the gray duct tape.
Yes.
Okay. So item 12, what was item 12?
Item 12 was one piece of gray-colored duct-type tape, said by the agency to have been tape from mouth JJ.
Okay. And what is item 13?
Item 13 was one mass of duct-type tape, gray again, and that was said to be from ankles of JJ.
Okay. And item 14?
Item 14 was also a mass of a bunch of duct type tape, and that was said by the agency to be from hands of JJ.
Okay. And item 15.
I didn't have item 15.
I'm sorry, I misspoke.
18. 18 was one green-colored Letica Corporation piece of plastic, and that was said from the agency to be bucket bag 2 of 3 Tylee.
Okay. And what color was that?
Green.
Okay. So item 10, did you process it for the presence of any latent prints?
Yes.
Okay. Did you develop any usable prints on that white bag that was labeled JJ had?
No.
There were no usable prints on item 10?
No.
Okay. On item 11, that gray duct tape on the black plastic, did you develop any usable prints on item 11?
Yes.
Okay. Item 12, did you develop any usable prints on item 12, the piece of gray duct tape? I believe you said hands?
That was mouth.
That was mouth.
And no.
And item 13?
Yes, I developed latent prints.
Okay, and that was around?
That was around the feet of JJ, or said to be.
Around, item 13 was around what?
The feet, I'm sorry.
Okay. And item 14?
That was the tape around the hands, and I did not develop any latent prints there.
Okay. Were you able to pull any hairs off of that item 14?
I don't recall. I think there was hairs off of all the items, but I'd have to look at my notes to see specifically how many.
Okay. And were you able to develop any prints off of item 18?
No.
Okay. So just to be clear, which items did you get usable prints off of?
11 and 13.
Okay. Let's talk initially about item 13. Were you able to, after you developed some prints on item 13, were you able to compare them to any known samples?
Yes.
Okay. What knowns did you compare the prints on item 13 to?
Lori Vallow, Chad Daybill, JJ Vallow, and Alexander Lamar Cox.
Okay. And were you able to reach a definitive conclusion about whether they matched any of those individuals?
No.
So was there an inconclusive finding?
There was an inconclusive finding on both of them for two different reasons.
What were those reasons?
One was it's latent print 13.1, and that was because of the quality of the print. Sometimes if the print just is very poor quality and doesn't provide a lot of information, it may be pushed through to, I can compare this print, but I just can't be certain on these details and can't rely upon them. So it ends up being inconclusive due to the quality of the print. The other one was inconclusive because of the area of skin the latent print was thought to have come from. I didn't have good recordings of those areas. So it was inconclusive, needing better knowns.
Okay. Now, what about item 11? You received usable prints. Were they of sufficient quality that you could do a comparison?
Yes.
Okay. In anticipation of your trial today, did you prepare an exhibit to aid you in explaining where you got those prints to the jury?
Yes.
Okay. Let me have, Your Honor, if I may I have the witness handed State's Exhibit 210, a copy of which has been given to both the court and the defense?
Yes.
Do you recognize the pictures that are in State's Exhibit 210?
Yes.
What are they?
The first photo is an overall picture I generally take when I first receive the evidence in, so I can take it as to show how the evidence looked before I did any processing. So that's the first photo, and this is showing item 11.
Okay.
Would you like me to keep moving
on?
Yeah,
okay. We'll have you describe each of them for the record, and then we'll show them all at once if they're admitted and the court permits.
Okay.
What's the second one?
The second photo is of item 11.12, so part of item 11 that has been, I've numbered out instead of just being item 11 with everything. This is 11.12, and the processing is done on the item, and I marked the latent print that I developed. So you can see an overall picture showing that this is where the print was found on the item.
And are each of those images fair and accurate pictures of what your observations were and of item 11 that you processed at the ISP lab in this case?
Yes.
Your Honor, I move for the admission of State's Exhibit 210.
I have one more. Did you want me to look at the last one?
Oh, yes.
The last one is a picture of 11.15. So again, it's a piece of item 11 that was processed, and it shows my marking showing that where the latent print was developed on this item.
With that record, Your Honor, I move for the admission of State's Exhibit 210.
Okay, and I just want to make clear, Counselor, before it's admitted and published, there were some modifications from the exhibit to the court's courtesy copy and counsel's, I believe, so.
Yes, Judge. It should be an exhibit of total of 3 pages, as discussed at sidebar, which would be the cover page and 2 pages with images shown to defense counsel and the court.
Okay. With the exhibit limited to that, which will be submitted as evidence to the jury, is there any objection from the defense?
Given that explanation, Your Honor, we have no objection.
Okay. Then the exhibit will be admitted. That's 210.
Thank you. And permission to display for the jurors, Judge?
You may publish it.
Thanks. So the front page of 210 is just a title page, correct?
Yes.
Your name, your position, and your lab number?
Yes.
Okay. And moving to the second page of 210, could you describe for the record and for the jurors what we're seeing in the second page of State's Exhibit 210?
Yes. So on the left, you're seeing on...
Sorry for moving it on you.
It's okay. On the left photo, you can see there's 2 different black bag kind of images. So on the right one, the one that looks like it has handles, that is what I'm calling the body type bag that the item was delivered in. On the left of that is the black plastic and the duct type tape that is item 11, and that was the actual item that was processed. The one
with
the handles.
Could you do me a favor, just a second?
Yeah.
Just do me a favor. If you could you show the jurors which one you processed, please, using the laser pointer that's up there?
Of course. So this is the item that was processed, and then this is the item that was not processed. So this is just basically packaging. That's how I used it.
Okay.
And so
let me ask you a question. You were pointing at the picture under which the title is called item 11, correct?
Yes.
And on the left-hand side of that picture was the item you processed?
Yes.
And on the right-hand of that particular picture was the item you call packaging?
Yes.
Is that the item that the duct tape and the bags came in?
Yes.
All right. And what about the picture on the right-hand side of the second page? I believe it's labeled item 11.12.
Yes, so this item here, item 11 in its entirety, was multiple pieces of plastic. Not multiple pieces. I'm sorry. Let me correct that statement. A piece of black plastic with multiple pieces of tape on it. So taken apart, this is the bag in its entirety, is this picture on the right-hand side. And this is after processing. So what you're seeing here is just the bag part. And it's to show that this print here was marked. So that is print 11.12.1.
So when you say the print, that was the print that surfaced after you processed?
Yes.
Very generally, how did you process the item 11 so that the print 11.12 was visible?
So because there was both plastic and tape, I used 2 different processes. So I did the first process, like I described earlier, where I did visual and then alternate light source visual, and then the glue fuming, followed by the dye stain, followed by the powder. That's what I did on the bag. On the tape, I did the same thing, but I added a step, which is using a liquid powder that adheres to the adhesive side of the tape to try to visualize prints on the adhesive side.
Okay. And I know you said earlier that usable prints were developed. Were they developed on what part of 11 and 11.12?
On the plastic portion, not on the duct tape portion.
Okay. And are we able to see, there appears to be some handwriting up in the corner of that picture. What is that?
This green post-it note here? Yes. Yes. That's just my labeling system. I'm adding an additional label because the picture's taken so far away because the item is so large. I added a little note there to show.
Okay. And then there appears to be some yellow up at the top of the image.
The marking? Yes. So the half moon mark is just how we draw our orientation. So for a print, that's my indication of what I think the orientation of the print is. And then I'm just drawing on it to show that that's the latent number. So this particular photo is showing that the latent is kind of angled and the print number is 11.12.1.
Okay. And so is that the area on the tape, on the bag, I apologize, the area on the black plastic where you found a latent print?
Yes.
Okay. And when you say the orientation, that's the sort of the direction the print was facing or going on that black plastic?
Yes.
Okay. And so once you were able to develop latent print 11.12, were you able then to take and compare it to any knowns?
Yes.
Did that comparison yield any results?
Yes.
What were those results?
I identified 11.12.1 to the right little finger of the card bearing the name Alexander Lamar Cox.
Okay. Were you able on this item to make any more conclusions about latent prints on item 11?
Yes, I have another latent that was developed on this item.
And what was that latent number?
11.15.1.
Turning to the third page of your exhibit, what are we looking at?
This is a picture of the part of item 11 that had fallen off during processing. So it was part of the original bag. And this is showing the item after it was done processing, again showing my marking for the latent in this green yellowy color here.
Okay. And what number, I'm sorry, is it? It's kind of far away from me to see. What number was that latent identified as?
11.15.1.
Okay. And was there sufficient quality to that print for you to be able to do any comparison to that one?
Yes.
Who did you compare it to? What knowns did you compare it to?
For both prints, I compared to Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell, J.J. Vallow, and Alexander Cox.
Okay, and did your comparison yield any conclusions?
Yes, I identified it to the right palm, so this part of your hand in here, to Alexander Lamar Cox.
Okay. And so evaluation of item 11 in the lab, the black plastic with the duct tape, yielded two latent prints, correct?
Yes.
And both of those latent prints matched the known prints of whom?
Alexander Lamar Cox.
One moment, if I may, Your Honor.
Yes.
And just a real quick question. The hairs that you were able to obtain and pull, those were submitted and retained at the lab for further testing if necessary, correct?
Yes. So I repackaged them into a new coin envelope just to keep them all contained. And then they returned to the original packaging. And that was when I was done with my processing, that went back into the vault for someone else to check out if needed.
Okay. Because you don't do hair examination?
No.
You don't do DNA?
No. Nope.
And those hairs, however, were collected by you and Ms. Dace and saved for future testing, either at your lab or another lab?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I have nothing further.
We have no questions, Judge.
Okay. Without any cross-examination, then, that will conclude the witness of this testimony. May Ms. Martinez be released from any subpoena and excused?
Yes.
Any objection from the defense?
No, Your Honor.
All right. You can be excused then.
Thank you.
Please take your time. We'll have the bailiff assist you here, and if it helps, suggest the chair. All right, at this point, I think we'll take our mid-afternoon break, given the timing. Again, we need to stop by 3:20 today, so let's try and keep this break as quick as possible, but I know it takes time with our 18 jurors at this point, so hopefully around 15 minutes or so.
All right, please.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, let's have the jurors brought back in. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. Okay, we're back on the record on case CR 22-211624. The state continues with its case in chief. Mr. Wood, if you'd like to call your next witness, you may.
The state calls Detective Chuck Consitis.
Just briefly, I'll inquire, Detective Consitis, since you last were here testifying, have you reviewed or listened in on or in any way read any of the trial testimony that's occurred since you last were here?
No.
Okay. Thank you for that response then. Mr. Wood, you can go ahead and proceed with your direct examination.
Thank you. Welcome back, Detective. You've already been here, but just for clarity of the record, could you state and spell your last name for the record?
Last name is Consitis, K-U-N-S-A-I-T-I-S.
Thank you. Detective, you've already explained your credentials to the jury and explained that you've been involved with the case of the state versus Lori Vallow, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Detective, were you present at Chad Daybell's residence on June 9th, 2020?
Yes.
Did you take part in the search of that property?
I did.
At any time, did you aid in the recovery of the remains of Tylee Ryan from what from that backyard?
Yes.
The area where Tyler Ryan was located, was there a name given to that area, or was it was there a name given to that area?
The Pet Cemetery.
Okay. Detective, at any time in your investigation, were you a part of efforts to obtain satellite imagery of Chad Daybell's residence?
Yes.
Tell me how that came about.
So in late July of 2020, as the case was transitioning from a missing person into the homicide investigation, we were still monitoring the social media sites and came across a news story out of Salt Lake City off of KSL News. Their reporter was running a story that was centered around...
I'll object, Your Honor, to hearsay.
Your Honor, it's not coming in for truth of the matter. It's coming in to explain what the detective did next in his investigation.
All right. I will overrule the objection, but just indicate that it's for that limited purpose, and so to the extent it's quoting directly what anyone said, try to avoid that in your response, please.
I'm sorry?
So try to avoid any response that just directly quotes what anyone else said, if you can, in your response.
As part of your investigation, did you see a news story about satellite imagery?
I did.
Related to the Daybell residence?
Yes.
Based on what you saw in that news story, did you do anything in relation to that investigation?
So I followed up on the information that was depicted in that news story and reached out and contacted Apollo Mapping, which was the satellite company or satellite broker for that story.
Okay. And did you request any images from them?
We did. We requested any images, I believe, from the 1st of August through the end of October for images with high enough resolution that we may be able to pick up details on the surface of the Earth.
Did you receive any images from Apollo Mapping?
Yes, there were 4 usable images that we obtained.
Your Honor, I'd ask that the witness be shown State's Exhibit 142 and 142A. 142 is a business records affidavit that defense was given prior notice of, so I believe that comes in by way of stipulation.
All right.
Detective, do you recognize State's Exhibit 142?
I do.
What is it?
This is the Certificate of Authenticity for High-Resolution Satellite Imagery from Apollo Mapping.
Do you recognize State's Exhibit 142A?
I do.
What is it?
This is a flash drive containing the images of the requested images from Apollo Mapping.
Is that flash drive in an envelope?
It is.
Did you observe the contents of that flash drive?
I did this morning.
Did you initial that flash drive?
I did, and also dated it with today's date.
Okay, and did you place that flash drive in that envelope?
Yes.
Did you seal and sign it?
I did.
Is the seal intact?
It is.
Your Honor, the state would move for admission of State's Exhibit 142 and 142A into evidence.
Any objection?
Your Honor, State's Exhibit 142 does comport to be a certificate of authenticity under Rule 902 of the Idaho Rules of Evidence. I do not object. I have not had the time since handed this Exhibit 142A to review it since we've been in trial. So I'll conditionally not object if the exhibit contains other items on there, then I may bring up an objection.
Okay. I'll keep that possible objection under advisement. Exhibit 142 is the certification, it's admitted. 142A will be provisionally admitted, I guess, pending it being published and making sure that it's not something defense counsel hasn't previously had or has any further objections on. So if you'll just move through things slowly if you do intend to publish it, Mr. Wood.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, may I publish, and then I will do so slowly in a manner that defense has a chance to object if needed?
Yes.
Detective, what did you receive in terms of digital information from Apollo Mapping?
We received the images and the raw data that accompanied each photo.
Okay. Did it come in a folder like that?
It was placed onto a folder like that. It was downloaded over the Apollo Mapping website.
Okay. Your Honor, at this point, I'm going to ask if the defense has any objection. There's these .tfw files, which came with the Apollo Mapping, which is data, and then the actual images, which are these TIF files.
All right.
It appears to be what it claims to be, Your Honor.
Okay, so no objection at this point. Mr. Wood, you can continue to publish.
Your Honor, I'm going to ask that the witness be handed again. I apologize. He should have kept that. The business records affidavit.
Thank you.
Detective, when you received that business records affidavit, did it include information about the photos you received?
It did.
Can you tell me what the information contained about picture, the date and time of picture, the first picture is?
The first picture depicted is given the date of August 27th of 2019 at 18:33 hours UTC. That's the coordinated universal time. But when adjusted to Mountain Standard Time, which is the time zone we are currently in, it's you take off 6 hours, minus 6 hours, so the time of day is adjusted to 12:33 in the afternoon.
Okay. Detective, is this that first image?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to zoom in. Do you recognize that property?
Yes, this is an overhead aerial image of the Chad Daybell residence located at 202 North 1900 East in Rexburg, Idaho.
Are there any landmarks that you recognize on that image?
Yes.
And if you could use a pointer just to point them out real quick.
This is the main Daybell residence. This is the 1900 East. And this is the detached garage and shop. Here is a marker. It's a large bush. We have a fire pit right here. We have a standing section of fence. It's like a wood fence that's got three or four rungs on it. It's about maybe 10 feet long, 8 to 10 feet long, if I recall. And then right here is a hitching post, which is shaped like an H. It has a large diameter post, like, I don't know if it's the same width as like a telephone pole or something. It's kind of a large diameter. And that's the marker at the base of that. There's a marker that was used for the pet cemetery.
Detective, can you tell me about the second picture, about the date and time it was taken?
The second image was taken on September 2nd, 2019 at 18:32 hours UTC. So again, adjusted for Mountain Standard Time, that's 12:32 in the afternoon.
Detective, is this that second picture?
Yes.
I'm going to zoom in on it. Is this the same property that you've been speaking about, the Chad Daybell residence?
Yes.
Okay. And the landmarks are the same as you saw before?
Yes.
Can you tell me about the date and time of the third picture?
The third picture was taken on September 9th, 2019 at 18:32 hours UTC, so adjusted for 12:32 in the afternoon.
And you said that picture was taken September 9th?
Correct.
Is there anything remarkable about that date in your investigation?
Yes, as pertinent to our investigation, we believe that's the time frame, the day that Tylee was killed and buried on the property.
I'm going to zoom in. Detective, is this that same property?
It is.
It appears there's some cloud cover on that, but is there anything about that picture that stood out to you in your investigation?
Yes. So, again, just to reorient, you have the main house, the detached garage and shop. Here is that standing fence section. And then you notice a large discolored darkened shape there right where the immediate area of the pet cemetery marker.
Okay. And what time of day was this picture taken?
This was taken at 12:32 in the afternoon, and approximately it was less than an hour. This picture was taken less than an hour after we know that Alex Cox left the property.
Detective, can you tell me about the fourth picture?
The fourth picture was taken on October 25th of 2019 at 18:42 hours. So adjusted for Mountain Standard Time, it was 12:42 in the afternoon.
Detective, I'm going to zoom in. And is this that same property?
It is.
With the same landmarks that you observed before?
Yes, the residence, the outbuilding. You see the fence, and you also see the hitching post at the pet cemetery marker, along with the fire ring and the bush for markers.
Okay. One moment, Your Honor. Detective, I'm going to... So this is the same property. I'm going to go back to the picture taken on September 9th.
Okay.
And zoom in on that property. In your investigation, was there anything significant about that discoloration you spoke about earlier?
That was in the immediate area where we found Tylee.
And this picture was taken September 9th, correct?
Yes.
Your Honor, the state has no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wood. Any cross-examination, Mr. Archibald?
Detective, did you ask for all photos from this Apollo mapping company?
We did. There were several photos that could have been used, but due to the capabilities of each satellite, how was explained to me, how they're programmed. So some are for higher resolution, some are for lower resolution. There's different elevations. So the satellite images that use the lower resolution will just pick up topography, like shapes of the mountains and the hills and the layout of the land, where the higher resolutions will depict sharper images that you're able to discern, like a house or a vehicle. And so out of all those images, there was only four that used that high enough resolution for us to.
And are these from a satellite that only passes over the property every 5 or 7 days, or is it a stationary satellite that's continually taking pictures of the same place?
I don't know. I believe that the satellites are moving around.
Okay.
And orbiting.
And so, did you send them Apollo mapping a subpoena, or did they just provide these voluntarily?
We sent them. Well, the images, or are we talking about the?
Yeah, the images.
We had to purchase the images, so the images totaled about $1,500 to purchase from the company.
I see. And so these images, on the September 9th one, in your investigation, you believe this is the day that Tylee was buried on this property?
Yes.
Do you believe it's the day that she was burned on the property?
Yes.
Is there any indication in this photo from September 9th of smoke or fire?
No.
And is this the day that Chad Daybell texted his wife that he's going to have a fire in the backyard?
Yes.
And when you were out there in June of 2020, was there evidence of a fire the previous fall, if you could tell?
No.
This fire pit that was there in June of 2020, had it been there for some time, or was it, or could you tell?
I believe it was there for some time.
So this fire pit that you observed in June of 2020, was it like for roasting marshmallows or burning limbs from trees, or could you tell?
There was evidence that there was debris that was being burned in there, and it also could be used for having a marshmallow roast.
Okay. And so in your investigation, have you been able to tell if Tylee was burned there on that property or burned somewhere else and transported to that property? I don't want you to speculate.
I'm not going to speculate. I just know when we were removing her remains, there was, you could smell fuel. So that's what I can speak to.
Okay. Any evidence of a fire in the fire pit and then having Tylee's remains dragged over to where you found them?
There were pieces of bone fragment and tissue that we collected that were sifted from that fire pit. There was something there. Whether to say if they went from the pet cemetery to the fire ring or fire ring to the pet cemetery, I can't answer that.
Okay. And the image that you showed us from September 9th, was that 12:32 in the afternoon?
Yes.
And a little bit cloudy on that day?
A little cloudy.
But as far as you could see, on that satellite imagery, there was no smoke or fire that you could see?
No.
All right, thank you, Detective.
Any redirect?
Just briefly. Detective, in the photo from September 9th, is the fire pit obscured by clouds?
Yes.
That's it.
All right, thank you. That'll conclude the testimony of this witness then. We'll have the bailiff go ahead and assist you out. I don't know if you want me to inquire if the witness will be excused or is he to remain available in the case.
Your Honor, we're just standardly keeping our law enforcement members available in case they need to be recalled later.
Very well. Thank you.
I don't know if the court wants the envelope that 142A was in.
Yes. Could I have a very quick sidebar with counsel here? All right, Ms. Blake, if you'd like, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state will call Samantha Williams. And, Your Honor, before we get started, I would note that Ms. Williams is a victim in this matter.
Very well. I was made aware of that. I don't believe the exclusionary rule would apply in this case, so I don't need to inquire as to whether or not any of this trial has been observed by this particular witness. So with that in mind, I'll just advise Ms. Williams, if you would please make audible responses, verbal responses to any question, and avoid talking at the same time as anyone questioning you. That'll help us keep a clear record. And with that, Ms. Blake, you can inquire on direct.
Thank you, Your Honor. Will you please state your name and spell your last name?
Samantha Gwilliam, G-W-I-L-L-I-A-M.
Are you related to Tammy Daybell?
Yes, I am. She's my sister.
Do you recall being contacted by law enforcement about a pet cemetery on Tammy and Chad Daybell's property in Idaho?
Yes.
Were you aware if Tammy had a pet cemetery?
Yes, I knew she had one. We had seen it when we had gone up to visit.
And I would ask that the witness be shown State's Exhibit 23A. I have three copies, so one for the court counsel, and then if we can have the witness shown one. And when you talk about a pet cemetery, do you know where it was located on the property?
Yes, it was on their property to the side of the red barn. They had a fire pit that we did have marshmallow roasts at, and there was a fence with a little dog statue next to it. My niece's dog was buried there, and that's why they put the dog statue on top of it.
And that photo that you've been shown, does that appear to be an accurate depiction of the property as you knew it?
Yes.
And, Your Honor, I would ask for the admission of State's Exhibit 23A. I'm not sure that it was previously admitted. Another witness may have used it.
Any objection?
No objection.
I don't believe it was previously admitted, so 23A is now admitted.
And if I could have permission to publish that to the jury?
Yes.
And I think there may be a pointer up there.
There is.
Can you indicate where you knew the pet cemetery to be located?
Right here in this little fence, you can see the little dog statue right at the base. This is the fire pit.
And how did you know, or I guess you've indicated that, was it common for Tammy to have a pet cemetery?
Yes, we all grew up with pets, and they were like our family. So when they pass away, we always buried them on our properties.
And that property in particular was, do you know whether that property is 202 North 1900 East in Fremont County, Idaho?
Correct.
Did Tammy love animals?
She did.
Do you know if she loved them her whole life?
Yeah, we always had pets, guinea pigs, she had ducks, like the whole gamut. We had all of them.
Did animals seem to love Tammy?
Yeah, she was a person that was, you know, they were just drawn to her, and she loved taking care of them.
Was that the same way with people?
Yeah. She was a little bit of an introvert, but she loved people and loved taking care of them. She loved her grandkids.
And, Your Honor, I'm going to ask that the witness be shown State's Exhibit 298. I believe defense counsel has already been provided a copy. Do you recognize that photo?
Yes, I do.
And who is that?
It's my sister.
And, Your Honor, I'd move for the admission of Exhibit 298.
Any objection?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Archibald.
When was this picture taken, do you know?
It was taken at the wedding of one of her children.
Do you know about what year this picture was taken?
Hold on just a second. Was in within the year or two of her passing?
Maybe 2017.
Yeah, probably 2017. I can't remember. All of her children got married quickly, you know, the older kids within a year of each other. And so within the same year. So it was all, you know, within the year or two of her passing, because she just started having grandchildren.
With that foundation, Your Honor, I don't have any objection to the exhibit.
All right. Exhibit 298 is admitted.
Thank you. And may I publish it for the jury?
Yes.
How many children are in your family?
There's five of us kids.
Where did Tammy fit in that line?
She was the second oldest.
And how many brothers?
We have three brothers.
And you and Tammy were the only girls?
Yeah, we were the only sisters.
Were you close growing up?
Yes, we were only 4 years apart, and so we were far enough apart we didn't fight, and close enough together that we got along really well.
And did you maintain that closeness as you entered into adulthood?
Yes, we talked every day and saw each other every day. And we did everything together with our children.
And do you recall when Tammy started dating Chad Daybell?
Yeah, I do.
Did you know him from before?
Yes, his family lives in our hometown. And so I went to school with his brothers. He was older than me. He was the same age as my oldest brother. So he was not one that I hung around with, but I knew him.
Did you like Chad when she started dating him?
Yeah, he was a really nice guy.
Did you feel like he treated Tammy well?
Yeah, he did.
And then they ultimately ended up married?
Yeah.
And throughout their marriage, did you maintain contact with Chad and Tammy?
Yes, we were very close.
Was Chad, in fact, friends with your husband?
Yes.
Prior to Tammy moving to Idaho, how close did she live to you?
We were two blocks away from each other.
How often did you see her?
Every day.
Do you know how many kids Tammy and Chad have together?
Yeah, five.
And you mentioned earlier Tammy's also a grandmother?
Yes.
Did Tammy want to move to Idaho?
At first, no. She doesn't like change. And all of her family was there. So in in Springville. So it was not something she wanted to do at first.
Do you know whose idea it was for them to move?
It was Chad's.
Did Tammy work prior to moving to Idaho?
Yes, she did.
What did she do for work?
At the time that they moved, she was the special ed secretary at the high school. And previous to that, she worked at the elementary school as the computer teacher.
Was she good with computers?
Oh, she was amazing with them.
She was the go-to person?
She was the go-to person. If any of us had a question about something, that she could answer it, and she would pick up any new software and could figure it out. She was self-taught and was very smart.
And the two jobs you mentioned, she worked closely with children?
Yes, she did.
When they first got married, do you know what Chad did for work?
He was working for the Springville City Cemetery for the Parks Department. He was part of the cemetery upkeep crew. They helped prepare all the graves, and they took care of the cemetery, you know, upkeep.
Was he also involved in ever digging graves that you know of?
Yeah, that was part of their job, is that they would dig all the graves that came through for any of the burials at the cemetery. Eventually, he came back and was the sexton at that cemetery, at that Springville. It was at the Evergreen Cemetery in Springville. And then eventually he was a sexton at the Spanish Fork Cemetery.
How did you find out about your sister's passing?
Chad called me the morning that she passed away.
Do you recall what he told you?
He told me that she had been really sick, and that she'd been coughing all night, and he had gotten up and with a coughing fit around midnight, 1 o'clock, and had gone back to sleep. And he was awakened by her that morning when she rolled out of bed dead.
Did that make any sense to you?
No, because I had just seen her 2 weeks previous to that, and she hadn't been that. She wasn't that sick at all. She was very healthy.
Did she indicate to you any activities that she was participating in?
Yeah, she was in a clogging class, and she was showing us some of her clogging moves, but she was also preparing to run a smaller race in their town. So she was trying to stay fit and healthy.
And how old was she?
She wasn't 50 yet. We were going to get ready to celebrate her 50th birthday.
When she came to visit in October, was that a normal visit?
No, it was out of the blue.
Did anyone come with her?
No, she came by herself, and that was unusual because Tammy didn't like to travel alone.
Did she tell you why she came down to visit?
Chad told her that she needed to come visit her family.
Was she able to see all of the siblings?
No, it was me and my mom and dad.
Did Tammy ever indicate to you that she had suspicion that Chad was having an affair?
No, she never said anything about it. If she did have any inkling, I think he probably brushed it away.
Did you notice any change in Chad and Tammy's relationship?
Yes, they stayed with us the first week in June of 2019, and something seemed off. They were very awkward at our house, and Chad wouldn't converse with my husband like they normally do. It just seemed really strange, and we weren't sure what was going on.
Were there any other instances where things seemed a little off?
Yes, in my birthday in July, Tammy showed up at my front door to give me my birthday present. I didn't even know they were in town, and he stayed in the car the whole time with it running. So she literally stood in my house for 5 minutes to talk, and then they just left, and he didn't even bother to come in and say anything. It was really weird.
And that was of 2019?
Yes.
Had you and Chad had any kind of a falling out?
No.
And, Your Honor, I'm noticing the time, so.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Ms. Blake. Unfortunately, we need to break for the day so we can continue with the testimony of this witness tomorrow.
That's fine.
All right, thank you, Counselor. That will conclude trial for today then. We'll start back, as I mentioned, tomorrow at 8:30 and plan on running a schedule until 1:30 with a shortened break time. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, as we break for the day again, please continue to follow the admonishment to not talk to each other or anyone else about this case. Don't do any investigation. Don't follow it on the news. Don't look into it in any way so you can maintain your impartiality. And we appreciate you doing that every day. So that will conclude trial for this afternoon. So we'll go ahead and break for the day.
All right, please.
That wraps up segment number 4 from the 27th of April, 2023, in the trial of Lori Vallow-Daybell. There's much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuous coverage.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage. In the trial of Lori Vallow-Daybell
from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.